Hello everyone and welcome to this webinar. I'm Francis Seely from Enfield Climate Action Forum, and today we're going to look at climate change and public health, because climate change does have a huge impact on public health. In some times we don't realise the way it does, and it does mean that statutory authorities, the voluntary sector and so on, very often have to think their strategy and rethink their logistics and the way in which they deliver their services. And we've got Richard Gourlay with us today, who's the Director of Strategic Development in the North Mid NHS Trust, Hospital Trust. And we're doing a project with them that's helping to look at how we engage more effectively. So Richard, you know, thank you for joining us today. And if we could start to ask you really very briefly, if you could tell us something about yourself and your position in the North Mid.
Of course, and thank you for inviting me to participate in this. It's a real pleasure to talk about this subject and the importance it is for the National Health Service, but also for this hospital based in Edmonton on the borders of Enfield and Haringey. So my name is Richard Gourlay. I'm the Director of Strategic Development for the hospital here at North Middlesex. And what that means is that I look after the operational and estate development for the hospital, making sure that it's fit for purpose and it's there and available for our clinical staff to deliver their services from. But I also kind of take a responsibility for the strategy of the organisation with the Trust Board in terms of how we position ourselves in our local community, but also within the kind of wider health system, so North Central London in particular, in terms of delivering our services. And that's becoming increasingly important on the back of COVID. I'm also the kind of trust sustainability lead, so I'm the executive responsible for delivering the green agenda in the organisation.
Okay, well, we'll come to the green agenda in a minute, but let's start by, you know, stating the World Health Organization has said that the climate crisis is a health crisis. Why is it a health crisis?
Absolutely. So, as you say, the World Health Organization has recognised climate change as the kind of biggest health threat facing humanity, and it affects, and it's very easy to think of this at a national scale and an international scale. So, but it fundamentally affects the social and environmental determinants of health, such as clean air, safe drinking water, food supply and shelter. And again, as I say, that may not feel like something that's particularly relevant to us living in London. It's more relevant in some of our local populations around North Middlesex. For me, when I see pictures on television, it often reflects across Africa and South America in terms of the more extreme weather conditions and the flooding that we see in those areas. But I think, you know, it's absolutely impacting upon the weather and the health position that we've got here in the UK. So my particular interest is around air pollution. And the impact that air pollution is having mostly on our children, but also on the adult population as well. So air pollution is a massive contributor to childhood respiratory conditions and exacerbates other chronic conditions such as cardiovascular disease and therefore contributes to things like lung cancer and other diseases.
I was going to say, so when you look at something like air pollution, and it's clear that, you know, air pollution does affect health, but you know that climate change is going to make that worse. So from a strategic point of view, how do you plan for that becoming worse?
How do we plan for that becoming worse? So actually, one of the things we want to try to do is to try to arrest some of that deterioration, and working with our local partners to make sure that actually we do whatever we can as part of the hospital to address it. But in terms of your question, it is absolutely sustainable hospital is one of our key things, and why we are now taking such a keen interest in the kind of public health and inequalities that affect our local community. Because we therefore know that we'll need to make sure that we make greater provision for children's services, for paediatric attendances coming to our hospital. We need to therefore invest in new workforce So we're starting to look at nurse specialists in asthma, childhood asthma, but also how we treat lung cancers that are again exacerbated by air pollution. So for us, it's all about looking to the future and seeing about where we see demand increasing for our services and making provision for that, but then working with other local stakeholders, so voluntary sector, local authority, our council, to see what we can do to try to reduce that demand and reduce that health burden on the hospital.
I mean, you can do that locally on your own hospital, but it has to be done, I guess, within a national context of funding and so on. I mean, do you think nationally we are as aware as we should be about the impact of climate change on health?
Absolutely not. And I think, you know, the NHS, NHS England, who are our regulatory body, are doing a huge amount to try and promote interest and understanding. So it was a very big player at COP26 last year in Glasgow. And there's a lot of resources now coming out from the centre about greener initiatives but hospitals, primary care, our GPs, and community services should be doing to make our hospitals greener and to therefore reduce our impact upon the local environment.
Well, you're beginning to talk about the implications on your work, which was another question, but you're doing that really well. I mean, you talked about air pollution. Let's talk about another thing, because it's really quite serious, and that's the fact that temperatures are going to rise and rise and rise, and we're going to have heat stress, and that's going to affect a lot of people, particularly the old and those living alone. In Paris, we saw that, where women suffered and died as a result of it. I mean, how do you plan for that? Because you can't plan that alone, can you? It's not just a health thing, it's a community thing as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, mortality amongst the elderly increases in extreme weather conditions. And the rate of mortality can increase by up to 5% when the temperatures go over normal threshold. So it is a really serious issue. And you've referenced the experience of France recently. And what we have to do there is work with our local authorities to make sure that in terms of housing, that it's fit for purpose. Because that's a real key element. So we, in the health service, we talk about the kind of social determinants of health and what keeps people well. And actually, it's very small amount is what the NHS does, and it's far more about the environment that people live in. And so housing is a really key factor of that, and making sure that people have good housing to live in. We can't be reliant, though, however, on air conditioning and fans to impact upon that, because that just places increasing demand on energy. So apparently 10% of global energy is spent on air conditioning and fans and trying to keep places cool. So which is why it's so important, therefore, to address actually what's causing the world to heat up and what's causing some of our extreme weather conditions.
Well, I mean, it seems from what you're talking about and what you do, there are two or three areas that you're working on. One is to make your own hospital complex as green as possible. The other is to reduce risk. And the other is to work with communities to make them more resilient. Is that a fair summary?
I think absolutely that the last bit that we're really focusing on there is kind of how do we make how do we address some of the health inequalities in our local communities and make our population more resilient, as you say, so that they can live healthier, longer, more fulfilling lives. So for Enfield and Haringey, which we serve, I'm not too sure if your listeners will know that there's a kind of 15 to 16 years difference in healthy life expectancy as you go from the west to the east of the borough. And that's something that actually, from our perspective, we absolutely cannot tolerate. We cannot stand by and let happen. So it's all about what we can do then to work with our other stakeholders, primary care, to reduce that health inequality and make our local population more resilient so they can live better, healthy lives. And the things that we're doing around that, it's around education, making sure that actually we get into schools and we do education in schools about healthy eating. It's about making sure that food is available, the food that we provide in hospital, but that we then talk to our patients about, that they have a positive, healthy diet and they're not reliant on fried foods to eat on a daily basis. But it's also then encouraging about active lifestyles and how do you encourage people to take to give up their car for a period of time and look at using public transport, walking or bicycles. So it's all about how do we make our population healthier so that they can then make the life changes that reduce the risk for their own health and well-being.
Well, that all sounds like preventative measures. And in a way, one might ask, is that the role of the health authority or is that the local authority or is it someone else? Is that something you feel that you have to take on yourself?
No, it's not something that we think we take on ourselves at all. And actually, I would recognise that public health have played a key role in this over many years. But actually, there is strength in numbers and there's strength in the message that we give. For instance, I was talking to some representatives from London Cycling Campaign earlier this week as we're launching a bike loan scheme. And they were telling me about the social prescribing bicycle rides that they are now doing. So that's from primary care. So that's from GPs who are referring into the London Cycling Campaign and encouraging patients to be participants in bike rides. Now, they may only be short ones, but they then encourage people to live a more active lifestyle. And those are the things that from a hospital perspective, from our consultants and nurse specialists, that they are also starting to get involved with in terms of actually starting to think about less medicalization of treatments and actually how we start to address some of the symptoms and why people are developing these long-term conditions. So we are going to be far more impactful and have a far greater influence on our population if we do this together and that there are messages from many different sources that are going to them. Because you know, what we know is that we, as human beings, we all react in different ways and we're all influenced by different authorities and different individuals in the way that we kind of take on information. And we've got to make sure that we do that as a hospital, but as an overall health system as well.
I mean, strategically, which is your position, it sounds like you're talking about, over time, a major cultural shift in the way health authorities work, in the way in which they think. So that you're looking at not just direct service provision, but you're looking at how GPs can work with communities through social prescribing, through relationship welfare. You're looking at how, as in north of Enfield, in Ponders End, where they're setting up hubs for well-being and physiotherapy to prevent people going to the GP. You're talking about working with people to prevent obesity and diabetes by preventative measures. Now, that's different from the health service that existed 10 years ago. You're having to rethink, aren't you?
And we've got to, because you know, as North Middlesex, we probably have the busiest single site A&E in the whole of London. We see demand going up for our services day on day, month on month, and year on year. And that isn't sustainable for us, but it's not sustainable nationally either from a financial perspective. It's not sustainable for us because there's a limited workforce out there. There's only so many doctors, nurses, physios, OTs, etc. that are available to work. But we're also on a very condensed site as well. So we can't keep building new wards, we can't but keep building new outpatient clinics or new diagnostic centres. So we've got to look at, well, how do we stop the increasing demand? How do we stop, as you say, the kind of obesity problem that we've got rife at the moment in our local population? Because if we don't, then we will not be able to sustain and be able to deliver the kind of excellent healthcare that our population think that they deserve and that they absolutely deserve and that we should be able to provide on a day-to-day basis.
Does that mean you have to think more in terms of community outreach rather than direct provision?
I think we've, as you said, you know, the NHS has been quite insular looking over its 70, 80 years. That's been existence. You know, so hospitals have always kind of treated people when they've come looking because they've got something wrong or delivered their babies when they come to maternity services. we've got to take a far different approach in terms, as you say, of working with public health to really get the message out there that people need to change the way that they live. Otherwise, we'll start to see a downturn in life expectancy. We'll start to see a downturn in healthy life expectancy. And that's nothing. That's not something that any of us want to see in my lifetime or my children's lifetime.
I gather when Beveridge wrote his report, and our health service and our social services have been based on that a great deal, he had a sort of top-down model. And then he wrote a second report and he said, I left one thing out, I made a mistake. I left the community out. What you're doing now is bringing the community back in.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, our councils have done this very well over some time and doing something called co-creation. So working with the local population, with the local communities, so that they can direct what services that they think they need for their local area. And we can respond to that and influence that in terms of our own provision. But actually, what I think is also incredibly important, and I hope that we can do through this kind of webcast, is actually make people aware of the facts and make people truly aware of the pace scale of climate change and how this is a health crisis. And that we need to make those changes now, and that actually that there is national policy and national change that we've got to see, but there are individual choices that we make on a day-to-day basis about how we live our lives that have a detrimental impact upon the environment and a detrimental impact upon the well-being of our lives.
I mean, to create that wellness means reaching communities that very often are described as hard to reach. I mean, it's not a very good term, but people use that term. And you said quite rightly that the most marginalised and vulnerable communities are those who are disadvantaged, and they're going to suffer the most by climate change. And do you think we have learned, all of us, including the voluntary sector, to reach those people in the right way? I mean, for example, to reach young people, you may have to use digital means, they won't use text. And I was talking to someone from the Caribbean Association and said, if you're going to talk about reaching the Caribbean Association and Caribbean people, their anxiety is not just their own health, it's the people back in the Caribbean, their family and their kin. And if you don't take that on board, you won't be reaching them effectively. Is that something we all have to rethink?
Very much so. It is one of those big challenges for us in terms of how do we nuance the message and craft the message that reaches each of the communities that it has to. And I think, you know, one of the things I absolutely see are schools play a fundamental role in that, and our input into schools. So we're doing outreaching into schools and doing education around what the NHS is there for and what it delivers, but also the impact on how to access the NHS going forward. Because our view is absolutely, we set up the life structure for the future, but also those children are often very influential in their own families and take back that information. So it's one of those things that we see as a kind of key medium for dissemination of information and education as well. But we've got to have a rethink in terms of, as you say, in terms of those other communities and how we appropriately disseminate the message so that actually it hits the right people and gets the right message across.
Well, you're the second webinar I've done today, and this morning it was with the Eco School Network. And there are a number of networks in education now, Educate Global with the Eco School Network, the Sustainable Network. Is it a part of your job to now link up with those so that you can get that message across in schools? And I know you're linking up with us to try and reach some of the communities in Eastern Enfield as well. Do you have to rethink in the way you do it now?
Well, we do, and I think, you know, one of the other things that we see very much is that our staff are great ambassadors. So 60% of our staff who work in North Middlesex Hospital live within the local area, or probably live within 5 or 6 miles. And they represent the local communities, and they come from the local communities. So we are very much working with our own staff as well in terms of how we disseminate that message and get that message out. But we need what I'd recognise as well is that there's more that we can do with community groups and particularly those, as you said, it's not the nicest way of describing them, but the difficult, more challenging to reach. And where English isn't always their first language, where digital exclusion is significant and is not, and so you can't always rely on the internet or on webinars or Instagram, etc. We've got to look at different modes of getting that information out, and often that will be that will be driven by those communities.
Yeah, I mean, when I used the term hard to reach once, I got told off because the person who told me off said they're not hard to reach. It's just that we find it hard to reach because we're not using the right means. So in a way, we've got to be fairly modest and realise that we've got a lot to learn as well, don't we, all of us?
Absolutely.
Okay, and the other thing, of course, that you're doing is you're trying to make, in your green plan, you're trying to make your own hospital as green and sustainable as you can, which is another plank of what you do. Tell us about how you're doing that.
Sure. So what we know is the NHS is probably responsible for about 4% of the country's carbon footprint. And that does incorporate both the kind of our direct emissions, those that we're in control of, and also the indirect emissions as well, those that are kind of are a byproduct of us delivering those services. And we've got a number of initiatives that we're leading on within the hospital to try and address those direct emissions. So those range from looking at different energy sources and the way that we manage our energy. So we're moving to LED lighting throughout the hospital. We're using solar panels to generate some of our energy as well, and also working with other local providers to look at, you know, what can we do differently to make sure that we have renewable sources of energy being produced and providing energy into our organisation. We're also looking at a number of the products and materials that we use across the site. So one of the most impactful of those is an anaesthetic gas called desflurane. And we have virtually eradicated that now from use in the hospital. It's only used in very few exceptional cases as we've moved to a different type of anaesthetic gas for anaesthetics in our theatre block. But actually, we know that there's further work to do on that. So actually, why are we still pummeling anaesthetic gases into the atmosphere? Because there's alternative ways, so in using intravenous anaesthetics to be able to put patients to sleep. So we're looking at alternatives like that, and for inhalers, so the kind of puffers that people use for asthma, we're starting to try and change those so that actually they become a more sustainable way. We're teaming up some local organisations, so Edible London, who we're entering into a partnership with them to look at how we can make the site far more environmentally friendly, how we can use vegetation and some plants to help with carbon sequestration, how we can use plants and trees to pull carbon out of the atmosphere, but then how some of those plants and we'll be able to produce vegetables, and we'll be able to either use those vegetables in our patient dining, or else we'll be able to give them away to local communities and local schools as well, to be able to therefore utilize in eating healthily and improving people's diets. One of the things that we're working at a kind of regional level on is around our procurement. So obviously we buy a lot of goods. Some of those goods are very specialist and need to travel long ways. So it's actually looking at how can we reduce the air travel for materials that need to come long distances, and working with our suppliers, therefore, to look at what are they doing about their impact on the environment. But also the kind of other element of that is how do we buy more locally, you know, which has a double benefit in that actually it keeps money in the local economy, it provides employment for our local populations, but it means that actually we're cutting down on the amount of travel that either train travel or lorry travel that the products need to come from. So those are some of the procurement elements of it. And I guess there's just one last point I would make out, I would bring out. Which is actually in the way that we deliver our services. So we've learned a lot from COVID. It's not never an experience any of us would ever want to go through, but actually what it's helped us do is move some of our consultations, our outpatient attendances, to virtual consultations. Now, some of that works really well for our patients because they don't need to move them from their own home. But we need to be aware that it's not a model that fits all. So as I said, there's digital exclusion in our local communities. We need to make it accessible for everybody. But how do we reduce people's need to travel to the hospital? How do we reduce their need to kind of use a car to get to the hospital and parking on site as well? So those are a number of the initiatives that we've got ongoing at the moment to try and reduce our impact upon the environment.
You mentioned Edible London, which is interesting because one of the important things in deprived communities, particularly, is green space. I mean, we've done a webinar with Seeds for London that worked with housing associations to create community gardens. We worked with a woman who has got an allotment, and from the allotment, she provides for food banks. And it's working with those and realizing that green space and growing food is about well-being and good mental health. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's, so we've already done some work with Edible London in terms of our own allotment that we've got on site, and they've come on and helped revitalize it. When you're down there watching these people work, you realize, A, it's hugely active. It's making people really work hard, digging over the soil. They're having an active lifestyle. But it's also just very relaxing as well. And people gain a huge amount from the kind of mental improvements that they get from gardening. And so it's one of those things that we really feel passionate about, trying to expand and incorporate for more of our local communities to come on site and participate in that kind of event. So we really want to make the site far more green in terms of greenness, more open spaces, and working with the Greater London Authority to support us in doing that as well.
It's clear that one of the ways you're working is the development of collaborative networks. Now, that's the new buzzword. It used to be governance networks, which was often too top down. Governance networks is about how do you make the community an equal partner. And I read some research a little while ago, I wish I noted it, which said the health authorities are far better than local authorities in developing collaborative networks. I mean, is collaborative networks for you the way to go in order to deliver what you want to deliver?
So at the end of the day, we are here to serve our population as North Middlesex. We're here to kind of look after them and make the hospital something for them. And it's a term that's utilised a lot in the health service as an anchor institution. And that's what we would see as a key part of our role for Enfield and Haringey. We're a big employer, probably the major workforce employer for our local community. We want, as I said, we want to buy from more local suppliers so that we can put that money back into the local health economy. We want to provide education and training opportunities as well and expand people's horizons, young people's horizons, in terms of the opportunities of jobs in the health service. So we're here to support our local community, and therefore we need to link up in partnership with local community groups that exist and make best use of them, because this is a hospital for them. We've got to make sure that actually it isn't, as I said, it's not just about treating the people who come who aren't feeling well, but it's about providing holistic health and well-being, I think, for our local patients.
Okay, so we're coming very close to the end of the half an hour. So let me ask you, in the coming years, what changes would you like to see? I know you've done a lot already, but what changes and plans would you like to see for a greener future?
So for me, I think there's something about absolutely making sure that the message goes out to our local communities that climate change is a health crisis, and that we shouldn't be reliant on national policy to necessarily address this. There's actions and interventions that we can take ourselves that will have a positive impact. But I think we need to see an infrastructure that supports and delivers that. So for me, an active travel infrastructure that gives confidence to particularly to our staff to choose different ways of getting to work, that doesn't always be reliant upon their private car. I want to see a greater opportunity to use renewable sources of energy in all organisations. I don't think we've exhausted that by any stretch of the imagination, and we need to really focus on that. We need to look at the where our products come from and make it, and as far as possible, start to invest in our local community so that that's where we buy our goods from and materials. Now, as I said, some of those materials will be specialist and we can't do that. But wherever possible, we should prioritise local providers and local goodsmen and workmen to deliver some of that. So it's about how do we invest and back into the regeneration of our local areas and local communities so that actually people can look after themselves, have the home and work that they deserve going forward.
And you've developed through the North London CCG a green plan, and that's a way of doing that in an ongoing way, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. And so this is something that, you know, is here for the foreseeable, and we need to absolutely expedite the speed and pace at which we're doing some of this work. We are reaching out to other local hospitals. So UCLH have done a lot of good work around the green. I've just had a conversation with the Royal Free London NHS Trust as well. So it's learning from each other and seeing the good initiatives that that people are taking to have a positive impact here.
Okay, so finally, if anybody wanted to find out more about what you're doing in your own trust or what's happening in the health service generally in terms of, you know, restructuring what they do and what they think, where would they go? How would they find out?
So there are kind of three levels, I'd say. So there's NHS England, and they've published their own NHS plan, and they have their own greener NHS website. So if you go onto Google and search greener NHS, you'll find the webpage for NHS England and the initiatives that they are doing and taking at a national level to become a greener health service. As you said, at a CCG level, at a kind of North Central London level, they've also got their own web page. So again, if you enter into Google North London Partners NCL Green Plan, that's NCL Green Plan, then you'll be able to come across that. And also we've got our own Green Plan on our own website as well. And all those documents will set out what our aspirations are, what our intentions are for the next 12 months and 5 years in terms of some of our initiatives.
Okay, well, Richard, thank you for doing that. I mean, that was really interesting, and it's really encouraging to hear the way in which people are thinking in the health services now, and the way that they're, you know, restructuring just not just their program, but their thought processes about how they have to engage and how they have to have a holistic approach. And I think you've dealt with that really well, and I think lots of people will be very encouraged to hear the way it's going. So thank you for doing this interview with me. It's been great to have you here, and we'll end this interview now.